You know you've got a comeback in you. When you take the next step, you're going to make it count. For your career, for your family, for your life. You can earn a degree you're proud of with Purdue Global. Purdue Global is backed by Purdue University, one of the nation's most respected and innovative public universities. This is your chance. This is your opportunity. This is your comeback. Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
The Kakadu plum is an Australian native superfood containing 100 times more vitamin C than oranges. So why have you never heard of it? PR. No one's drinking a Kakadu smoothie? I'm J.B. Smoove, and that was a full episode of my new podcast, Straightforward, inspired by guaranteed straightforward pricing from AT&T Fiber. Get what you want without the complicated. AT&T Fiber, live like a gigillionaire. Available wherever you get your podcast. Limited availability in select areas. Visit AT&T.com/hypergig for details.
When you buy Kroger brand products, you feel like you're winning. That's because they offer proven quality at lower than low prices. In fact, we guarantee that you and your family will love how Kroger brand products taste, or you get your money back. So next time you're shopping for the family, look for delicious Kroger brand products, because they'll make you all feel like you're winning. Shop now, in-store, or online. Kroger, fresh for everyone.
On August 13, 1997, Tasha Shelby was arrested and taken to the Biloxi Police Department. Throughout that sweltering Mississippi day, she sat handcuffed to a chair while Sergeant Warren Newman interrogated her relentlessly. Tasha and her new husband, Brian Thompson, were still mourning the loss of his 2.5-year-old son, little Brian, who had died suddenly a few months before. But that didn't stop Officer Newman. His questioning grew more and more aggressive as the hours wore on. And then finally,
it turns into full-fledged, like, rage, where he's just, like, throwing everything off of the desk, and he's putting his arms and his hands on either side of my chair, and he's shaking me and looking me in my face, and he's like, I know you did it, you baby killer. Like, he's calling me a baby killer. He's telling me that I did this horrible thing. And he finally opens the door and says, this bitch is not going to talk. Let's book her. My name is Tasha Mercedes Shelby. I have been incarcerated for 25 years, wrongfully convicted for 22 years.
From Lava for Good, this is Wrongful Conviction with Maggie Freeling. Today, Tasha Shelby. Tasha Shelby was born in Columbus, Mississippi on March 8, 1975, to Paul Douglas Shelby and Sherry Lynn Buttermore. But she was raised in Texas by her father, Paul.
My mother was absent from my life, and so it was just me and my dad. I have several siblings that, you know, he had with other ladies. But for the most part, it was just me and my dad, and we just kind of lived a pretty nomadic life.
Tasha and her dad did everything together, and his love of music created some of her most favorite memories with him.
He loved classic rock, and anytime we would just be cruising around, he would always, like, school me on music. A song would come on the radio, and it could be, like, Lynyrd Skynyrd or Led Zeppelin or the Beatles or whatever, and, you know, we'd be sitting there looking at each other, jamming, and he'd turn it down, and he's like, what's the next line? Or he would ask me, who was this? So he kind of like introduced me to my love of music, which I love all music, but have a special place in my heart for classic rock because of my dad.
Life with her dad was a blast. He also made time to take Tasha to visit his sister, who lived in another state.
She was so cute and little.
This is Tasha's Aunt Penny.
And she comes bursting through my door and puts her hands on her hips and says, you are my Uncle Penny. It's Aunt Penny. She goes, no, Uncle Penny. And until she was a teenager, she called me Uncle Penny.
And then when Tasha was 14, tragedy struck.
When my dad was 33, he was killed in a car wreck. And after that, I kind of just felt a little lost in the world, if I'm being honest.
Tasha went to live with her Aunt Penny in California for a year. Aunt Penny thought the world of Tasha.
She's smart. She's funny. She has a very, very strong faith. She's very compassionate, empathetic towards people. And she's really a very strong woman, much stronger than me.
Even though Tasha was in the loving arms of Aunt Penny, she continued to feel lost without her dad. So she grew up fast.
In the 10th grade, maybe 3 months in, that's when I found out I was pregnant with my son. I was 17, and I just never went back to school.
At 17, Tasha gave birth to her first child, her son Dakota. By this time, she was back in Mississippi, and after a couple years, she ran into an old acquaintance, Brian Thompson III, also known as Big Brian.
He's one of the first people I see from my old crew, and he, you know, was like, hey, you want to go down to the beach? I'm like, yeah, I haven't seen the water in forever. And so from that moment forward, things kind of turned for us in another way. He was single, I was single, and we knew each other. We felt comfortable, and we started seeing ourselves falling in love.
Tasha says Brian was trustworthy and dependable. And with him, for the first time in her life, she finally felt a sense of stability and security.
Everything just felt like permanent. And nothing in my life had ever felt permanent. It always felt like fleeting, and this was just a moment that was going to pass. And it didn't feel like that with him. And I think he just added to my life. For the first time, I felt something or someone had added something for me and to me.
Brian and Tasha decided to move to a three-bedroom trailer in Biloxi and blend their families. Brian had a 2.5-year-old son who was called Little Brian, and Tasha had her 3-year-old son, Dakota. They also found out they were expecting a child together, a baby girl.
Then I did start having difficulties with my pregnancy. I had preeclampsia, and I'm still young, and I've never had anyone talk to me about what pregnant life looks like or any of these things. You know, my dad certainly didn't talk to me about those things at 14 and younger, you know. So I didn't know really what to look for, and I kept having a lot of pain, and it was early, but for like 3 weeks leading up to her birth, we kept having to go to the emergency room in the middle of the night because I would wake him up and say, this is it. She's coming. Let's go.
Finally, on May 14th, 1997, Tasha and Big Brian's daughter, Devin, was born. But the labor and birth left Tasha with serious medical problems.
With Devin, she actually almost died, and I almost died during the birth. They ended up having to do an emergency C-section. Devin was pretty big when she was born. She was over 8 pounds, and Dakota had only been like 6 pounds and something.
And Tasha is actually quite small, under 5 feet tall. Both her pregnancies had taken a toll on her body. So even before she had the C-section, she had already decided the birth would be a good time to get her tubes tied.
And so that's what I was recuperating from, you know, both of those surgeries. First, just on any given day is difficult for a woman.
After about 3 days in the hospital, Tasha was able to go home to her family, Big Brian, Little Brian, Dakota, and Devin. Tasha was on bed rest with Big Brian doing most of the caretaking.
You know, I was given instructions to not do any heavy lifting or bending over. You know, it was going to take time to recuperate from the difficult, you know, birth I had just given and the surgeries on top of that.
Were you even able to pick up the babies if you wanted to?
It was very difficult. I was able to pick her up, but I didn't do it unless I was home alone without Brian, which only happened on 2 occasions, which was the night in question.
On May 29th, 1997, Big Brian went to work around 7:30 p.m. He had just started a new job at a beer distribution plant, and he was on the night shift. Around the same time, Tasha's grandparents came over to help with the kids. They visited for about an hour, talking and watching little Brian play. Then they left, taking Dakota with them for the night. Tasha says that before Devin was born, she and little Brian loved their one-on-one time. They made watching movies and having snacks in the living room a special occasion.
So we were watching The Brave Little Toaster, eating the popcorn, drinking the pink lemonade. Then it's, you know, bath time and bedtime, and I put him to bed, and I go to bed. I'm exhausted.
Tasha went to sleep with baby Devin in bed with her and little Brian in his bed. And then, in the early morning hours, she was awakened by a loud thud.
And I immediately think Devin has fallen out of the bed. And I look, and she's okay, and I'm like, okay, well, that's not what has happened. And so I get out of my bed, and it's just like a couple of steps to the doorway, and I look, and I see, you know, little Brian is on the floor, and it appears to me that he's having a seizure. He was laying on the floor. His eyes were rolled in the back of his head. His hands, I remember his hands just looking almost paralyzed, if you will. And I'm thinking, I don't know what to do. And I'm panicking. I'm trying to get him to pay attention to me or hear me or respond to me. And he's not at all.
So Tasha called Biloxi Regional Medical Center, the hospital she had just been discharged from. They said to get little Brian there as quickly as possible. Tasha then called Big Brian, who raced home where Tasha had been trying to administer CPR.
Brian comes in. He's in a panic mode. He has him on the floor. He's doing CPR. He's like, we've got to go. We've got to go. I have to get a diaper bag for Devin. And when we're rushing to get to the van, Brian hits little Brian's head on the van door, which is not on purpose. He's almost limp like at this time, and his eyes are just rolled in the back of his head. And then we get to the hospital, and the man rushes him into the emergency room, and then we're in the emergency room, and they take little Brian away from us to, you know, try to help him.
In the meantime, hospital staff had called the police to investigate whether little Brian had been abused. Most states, including Mississippi, have mandatory reporting laws if there's suspicion of child abuse or neglect. And when the police showed up,
immediately they're asking questions. They're kind of hounding us a little, but I'm thinking this is normal. You know, there's an emergency, and I think this must be what people do when there's an emergency because they care so much. They want to know what's happened.
Little Brian was transferred to a hospital in Mobile, Alabama for further treatment, but it was too late for any meaningful difference. The next day, Big Brian had to make the hard decision to take little Brian off life support. The child was pronounced dead on May 31st, 1997. Tasha and Brian left the hospital devastated.
And we pull up to our house. There's already people there waiting to take Devin from me. And they're there telling me that I can't have my daughter. And I'm like, why? Like, I'm not understanding, and I'm crying. I'm hysterical. We're just pulling in from the loss of little Brian, and they rip her out of my arms, and I'm on my knees begging and crying, and they're taking her. That's when I realized, my God, they think that I have done something.
This episode is underwritten by AIG, a leading global insurance company. AIG is committed to corporate social responsibility and to making a positive difference in the lives of its employees and in the communities where they work and live. In light of the compelling need for pro bono legal assistance, and in recognition of AIG's commitment to criminal and social justice reform, the AIG Pro Bono program provides free legal services and other support to underrepresented communities and individuals. Following the death of little Brian, and as soon as Tasha and big Brian got home from the hospital, baby Devin was taken by Child Protective Services and put into foster care. Dakota stayed with Tasha's grandparents. While in mourning over little Brian, Tasha and big Brian went to Texas for a week to spend time with Tasha's family. A month later, they decided to seal their commitment to each other by getting married. Also during this time, little Brian's autopsy report was released. Signed by Dr. Leroy Riddick, it listed the cause of death as blunt force trauma to the head and the manner of death, homicide. 2 months after little Brian died, the police showed up at Tasha's door.
And they tell me that I'm under arrest for the murder, Brian Elwood Thompson IV, in... I kind of lost my bodily functions in that moment. I peed everywhere. And I'm asking, can I please change? And they're like, no, you can't do that. You have to go like this.
The police transferred Tasha to the precinct. It was summer and scorching hot in Mississippi.
And so they take me to this room that has absolutely no air conditioning, no fan, nothing. And they... not to be dramatic, but it felt like I was chained, but it was handcuffed. So I'm handcuffed. So one side of the chair was my left hand, and one side of the chair was my right hand.
Sergeant Warren Newman of the Biloxi Police Department then started interrogating Tasha about the death of little Brian.
And Warren Newman starts just digging in, you know, oh, we know that you did this. We already have the proof. But I understand you're probably suffering from postpartum depression. This was a lot of stress. You had 3 children. You just couldn't handle it. It was too much. Like saying all these things to me and I'm just crying. I'm thinking in my mind, like, I've had 3 brothers and 2 sisters and I pretty much helped raise all of my siblings. Like 3 kids is a piece of cake to me. You know, this is my life. This is everything to me. What are you talking about?
Tasha told Officer Newman that that night, little Brian fell out of bed. She didn't hurt him. But Officer Newman was not buying it.
And then it turns into full-fledged, like, rage, where he's just, like, throwing everything off of the desk, and he's putting his arms and his hands on either side of my chair, and he's shaking my chair, because I'm really little, and he's shaking me and looking me in my face, and he's like, I know you did it. You baby killer. Like, he's calling me a baby killer. He's telling me that I did this horrible thing and I just needed to make it better for myself and tell him the truth.
But Tasha said the truth is what she already told him. She didn't hurt little Brian.
And he finally opens the door and says, this bitch is not going to talk. Let's book her.
At 22 years old, Tasha Shelby was booked into the Harrison County Adult Detention Center to await trial.
I was in a state of shock. I thought, what is going on? Nobody was telling me, like, any answers. And I just thought, someone is going to find out that they're wrong. And they're going to give me everything back, you know?
Tasha waited 3 years in jail for her trial, all the while haunted by what happened to little Brian.
It just did not feel real. And they would watch something on TV, and I would be asleep, and I could hear a baby crying on the TV. And I remember waking up thinking that it was all a dream, that I had been arrested, and that I thought Devin was waking me up crying.
Tasha was appointed public defenders Michael Cox and Donald Smith at trial. Right from the start, Cox and Smith told Judge Robert H. Walker that they were overworked with a capital murder trial and did not feel comfortable representing Tasha. but Judge Walker dismissed their request, and Tasha went to trial on June 12, 2000. The prosecutors were Mark Ward and Scott Lusk. At trial, they told the jury that little Brian died from shaken baby syndrome, or SBS. The theory that
if a child exhibits bleeding in the brain, bleeding in the eyes, and brain swelling, then that is only caused by one thing, and that one thing is shaking. So the real fallacy with shaken baby syndrome is that it says nothing else could cause those injuries, just shaking.
This is Valina Beatty.
I'm a law professor at Arizona State University Sandra Day O'Connor College of Law, and I'm also the deputy director of our Academy for Justice.
She's also Tasha's post-conviction attorney. Valina says that at trial, the state argued that little Brian died from SBS, not from an accident, as Tasha said. The state's star witness was Dr. Leroy Riddick, the expert forensic pathologist who performed little Brian's autopsy. Dr. Riddick testified that, in addition to massive brain swelling, little Brian was covered in bruises less than 2 days old.
It's not surprising they believed the child died from shaken baby syndrome. There wasn't that much research out at that time challenging the hypothesis.
In fact, Tasha's own defense team agreed SBS caused the death, but they said it wasn't Tasha who did it. They said it had to have been Big Brian's doing, a theory Tasha vehemently did not agree with.
Absolutely. She did not. No, she said this child did not die from abuse by me or by my husband. Absolutely.
What the defense failed to argue, though, was that it was impossible for Tasha to have shaken little Brian so violently as to kill him. Remember, Tasha was under 5 feet tall, and she was on bed rest after multiple surgeries and giving birth. And at 3 feet tall, little Brian was big for his age, and they didn't mention this at all.
She could not physically have had the strength to pick up and shake or abuse a 33-pound, 2.5-year-old child who was over half of her size.
Big Brian also testified at trial. He believed in Tasha's innocence, but because the prosecution was considering charging him as well, he was scared. In the end, he distanced himself from Tasha and actually cooperated with the prosecution. On the stand, Big Brian talked about his and Tasha's concerns about little Brian's health.
Tasha was concerned about his development in that he was eating mud. He just didn't seem to be progressing at the same rate that Dakota, the other child in the household who is approximately the same age. So they should be at, you know, approximately the same development level.
Big Brian also said that several weeks before his death, little Brian's eyes appeared bloodshot. He and Tasha had also noticed little Brian staring off into space, his eyes rolling back into his head. This phenomenon would now be diagnosed as a petit mal seizure. Big Brian testified that he and Tasha had taken little Brian to the pediatrician, who suggested they see a neurologist. In fact, the appointment was scheduled for 7 days after little Brian's death. Tasha had also written about her concern over little Brian in her diary. However, neither her diary nor the family calendar where they had written the appointment with the neurologist were ever recovered or presented to the jury.
It was truly just a make-believe trial.
That's how Tasha's Aunt Penny remembers it.
They withheld evidence. They destroyed evidence. You know, they just lied about her. And, you know, she had all these journals that she kept in. Those journals she talked about, you know, how much she loved little Brian and how much she loved being mom. And, well, they took those journals. And then they lost them. Couldn't find them.
The defense argued the best case they could for reasonable doubt. That it was possible little Brian had died from falling out of bed, or that he had a seizure, or even that Big Brian was responsible. However, it was not enough. On June 16, 2000, at the age of 25, Tasha was sentenced to life without parole.
Do you dream of a healthier life, but education feels out of reach? Trinity School of Natural Health makes holistic education accessible with online programs to fit your busy schedule. Trinity School of Natural Health makes holistic education accessible with online programs to fit your busy schedule. Trinity School's Certified Natural Health Professional Program is the perfect entry point to gain foundational knowledge to empower yourself, your family, and your community to live healthier lives. Turn your passion into a career. Visit trinityschool.org for more info now.
Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered Chumbacasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby, mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to Chumbacasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
There's a lot of pros to drinking Health Aid kombucha. No cons that I can think of. Pro, amazing taste. Pro, pairs well with anything. Pro, probiotic. That's a literal pro. And it's deliciously refreshing. It's the perfect pairing to your meal or great on its own, whether you're having Pink Lady Apple, Berry Lemonade, or one of the other great flavors. It's the perfect swap for soda or alcohol. Make it part of your daily routine. Look for the brown bottle with an anchor on it and try Health Aid Kombucha today.
Sentenced to life in prison, Tasha struggled to come to terms with what was happening to her.
I didn't know that, you know, that this was real yet. But knowing that I didn't have my life, my children, my family, you know, everything in that moment just felt like it had been taken from me.
Even Big Brian was gone. The last time Tasha saw him, she was still in county jail, 2 years before she was convicted. It was her 23rd birthday.
March the 8th, 1998, we had a contact visitation. We actually got to hold each other and touch each other and, you know, told me happy birthday, I love you, all of these things, everything's going to be okay, you know, I'm here. He walked out that night and said, I will call you tomorrow. The next day I call like I normally would and I hear the recording that this number is no longer in service. And I have never spoken to him again. And I do not know what happened.
But others in her family have stayed in Tasha's life and continue to champion her innocence. The first time she visited Tasha in prison, her Aunt Penny found Tasha just as she remembered her.
She was still the same Tasha, you know, still little and cute and funny and smart. And, you know, it's like no time had ever passed at all.
Although Tasha was doing life in prison, she was determined to make the most of her time. So she joined an art program and tutored women getting their GED. And she began taking college courses, including one that she says has changed her life.
The History of Southern Women. Ida Mae Wells and Fannie Lou Hamer and learning about these women that went through these struggles. From that moment forward, I really started realizing who I am, really started realizing my voice and that I don't have to accept this, that I am innocent, and that I'm going to fight and I'm going to keep on fighting. And I don't care what struggles I have to go through. I saw these women that went through way more horrific things that I went through, and they rose above each time. It put something inside of me that will never be taken away from me, and it empowered me in a new way.
Tasha started filing appeal after appeal after appeal on her case. But all were denied. Finally, in 2010, she met Valina Beatty, who you heard from earlier.
I had just started working on shaken baby syndrome cases and realizing the extreme problems with that diagnosis and the number of people who had been wrongfully convicted based on that diagnosis.
According to the University of Michigan Journal of Law Reform,
As of 2012, an average of 200 defendants were being convicted of SBS-related crimes annually. Valina says that, unfortunately, it's not unusual in these cases for suspicion to fall on the child's caregiver.
The allegation is the person who was alone with the child, who is frequently a woman, must have abused the child and killed the child. I mean, it's a horrific allegation.
In fact, symptoms once used to diagnose SBS have since been shown to be inconclusive.
In 2001, there's this amazing researcher, Dr. Plunkett, who uncovered that shortfalls, so less than 3 feet tall, can cause bleeding in the brain. And we now know that, again, there can be bleeding from small injuries or even no injuries at all, like the process of a traumatic birth can even cause bleeding in the brain.
In 2015, after Valina took on Tasha's case, her team filed a second post-conviction relief petition, arguing that the conviction should be thrown out based on new scientific research on shaken baby syndrome.
Once we get the medical records, we had experts who were radiology experts, biomechanical experts, and forensic pathology experts. So one of each look at her case and look at the medical records to give us an opinion as to whether they thought the cause of death was abuse or shaking. So they all came back and said, no, they did not think it was abuse or shaking, that a shortfall definitely could have caused the bleeding in the brain and having a seizure could have been part of this as well.
A shortfall and a seizure, just like Tasha said she heard and saw. The experts also noted that little Brian had asthma and difficulty breathing, and lack of oxygen could have contributed to his collapse. They were also able to demystify the alleged bruising seen on little Brian's body.
There were these two large areas on little Brian's back and on his buttocks and part of his leg that looked like bruising and looked really horrible. And photos of little Brian were shown to the jury, and the jury was told that those were massive bruises, when instead they were actually a birthmark known as Mongolian spots. So it wasn't abuse. It was a natural thing this child had. It's nothing harmful. But Dr. Riddick mistakenly said that they were bruises.
Armed with all this information, Valina reached out to the state's star witness at trial, Dr. Riddick, who had been adamant that the cause of little Brian's death was SBS. They sent Dr. Riddick all the new information and waited. And waited. Then finally,
he calls and he leaves a message saying, you know, maybe I made a mistake.
Dr. Riddick, who died in 2021, actually revised his diagnosis. In this 2017 deposition, he says,
that I made a mistake on my conclusions, and that given the information I have now, that the child died from hypoxic encephalopathy with herniation due to seizure disorder.
Dr. Riddick literally changed the death certificate. So the death certificate no longer says homicide. It now says accident as the cause of death.
And that gave Tasha's team the opening they needed to be granted an evidentiary hearing. At the hearing, Dr. Riddick's testimony lasted half a day. He admitted he was wrong, but that wasn't enough for the court. Tasha's motion for a new trial was denied.
That judge ultimately decided that he simply believed Dr. Riddick's trial testimony more.
Wow. This man is sitting there telling him I was wrong, and he's telling him you're not wrong.
Exactly. Exactly.
I mean, it's not funny. It's just absurd.
It's shocking to me that the medical examiner who the state relied on to convict Tasha Shelby, that he changed his opinion, and the court just dismissed that. It's just horrifying to me that we can't acknowledge when science changes, and even when the experts change their opinions, we have to still keep people convicted.
Tasha now has a habeas corpus petition pending in the Southern District of Mississippi, and she's waiting to hear whether the judges will grant her a hearing, reverse her conviction, or uphold her conviction. Penny now lives on a farm in Tennessee with lots of animals, including donkeys that Tasha's excited to meet. And there's a room for Tasha at Penny's house when the time comes.
So I've sent her pictures of what her view will be like once she gets here. I'm just waiting on the phone call. And I will drive to Mississippi and get her and bring her home.
Tasha hopes to someday be reunited with her children. Devin was a newborn, and Dakota was 3 when Tasha was arrested. When Dakota turned 18, he reached out to Tasha, and they've been in touch occasionally via email. But she hasn't spoken to Devin and hasn't seen either child since. So Tasha wants to send a message to them in hopes that they're listening.
Dakota and Devin, I want you to know that I love you so much. I miss you and I think of you every single day. I don't know what you think or what you've heard, but I want you to hear from me as your mom that I am innocent. And I will continue fighting for my innocence as long as it takes. I look forward to the day that we could be reunited and can see one another again face to face. And I pray and hope to restore and rebuild all that has been lost between us. I love you so much. I also would like to tell my family and my friends, all the people that have supported me throughout this journey, that your belief in me is what has propelled me to be able to keep fighting. And I love you all, and you mean the world to me. And thank you very much.
To find out more about Tasha and how you can help, go to freetashashelby.com. You can sign a petition for her freedom to be delivered to Mississippi Governor Tate Reeves at change.org. These and other links are on our bio page. Next time on Wrongful Conviction with Maggie Freeling, Janetta Carr.
He asked me if I was in a gang. He told me that I was a danger and threat to society and that I was going to prison for effing life. When I asked him, my mom, he told me that it was not a Girl Scouts meeting and that my mom was not allowed to come down there.
Thanks for listening to Wrongful Conviction with Maggie Freeling. Please support your local innocence organizations and go to the links in our bio to see how you can help. I'd like to thank our executive producers, Jason Flom and Kevin Wordis, as well as our senior producer, Annie Chelsea, producer Lila Robinson, and story editor Sonia Paul. The show is edited and mixed by Annie Chelsea, with additional production by Jeff Clyburn and Connor Hall. The music in this production is by 3-time Oscar-nominated composer Jay Ralph. Be sure to follow us on Instagram at Wrongful Conviction, on Facebook at Wrongful Conviction Podcast, and on Twitter at Wrong Conviction, as well as at Lava for Good on all 3 platforms. You can also follow me on both Instagram and Twitter at Maggie Freeling. Wrongful Conviction with Maggie Freeling is a production of Lava for Good Podcasts in association with Signal Company No. 1.
There's 2 kinds of people in the world, people who love Health Aid kombucha and people who have never tried it. The bubbly mix of probiotic tea and refreshing juice is delicious and good for your gut health, with great flavors to choose from that you can't help but love. If you've never tried it before, maybe try a bottle or can of passion fruit tangerine or ginger lemon. Your taste buds and your gut will thank you. Look for the brown bottle with an anchor on it and try Health Aid kombucha today.
Do you dream of a healthier life, but education feels out of reach? Trinity School of Natural Health makes holistic education accessible with online programs to fit your busy schedule. Trinity School of Natural Health makes holistic education accessible with online programs to fit your busy schedule. Trinity School's Certified Natural Health Professional Program is the perfect entry point to gain foundational knowledge to empower yourself, your family, and your community to live healthier lives. Turn your passion into a career. Visit trinityschool.org for more info now.
Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered Chumbacasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby, mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to Chumbacasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.